Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about neurons. In this podcast, I'm going to try and mix a little bit of my curiosity and my knowledge of molecular physics to try and describe how a neuron works. So a neuron is basically a nerve cell. So there's heaps of neurons in your brain. So that's your brain. It's just a mass of neurons. There's a big clump of nerve. Neurons can be bundled together, and the long extension of these nerve cells, their long communication wires, can be bundled together to form a nerve fiber. And a nerve fiber, which you see in your body, you can often in cuts of meat, occasionally you can see bits of nerve fiber. It's this sheath, and inside are the axons. So all these nerve fibers, axons, go in, and there's multiple, say hundreds, inside a nerve fiber. So your nerve will go up to a certain section, and some will detect pressure, heat, or various things. Some will actually transmit motion. Some will transmit commands. Some will transmit information, and this will go up. Sometimes not all the way up to your brain. It'll be sort of like a little mini brain, computational circuits halfway through. This is when you hit your knee. The nerve pulse goes up and activates. Conversely, there's some reflexes which you can actually detect by, say, like running your finger down the base of an infant's foot. Determines whether the foot curls in is a good sign of the actual wiring of the nerves and the neurons, how they're all stacked together. So I'm actually going to go in on that fundamental nerve cell. That fundamental nerve cell is one of five major types in your brain. So you have the neuron, which is the one which actually receives nerve impulses and sends them on its way. We'll discuss that. But there's other ones, which are the myelin ones, which wrap around the cell and insulate the cell, so the nerve cell, so it only has a read at one end and a write at the other. It's like the insulation. There's astrocytes, which are star-type cells, which actually hold the like scaffold, holding it in the right position. There's a whole series of different types of cells. There's one to actually mush, to put your cerebral fluid, to get your cerebral fluid to run around your brain. So, in essence, your brain is in a sheath, a meninges, a membrane, which stretches all down to your spine, and has fluid going inside it. And this is its own little system. You're actually almost two organisms in one: the neural organism, and it interfaces with the rest of your body, which is full of breathing and all these other things, your command center. So it's got that sheath, and that sheath has got to get fluid. So there's canals, and fluid works in your brain. All these complicated things, hairs, which push this fluid around. And there's little actual mobile brain cells which go around and clean things up. So it's important to get some good night's sleep. But we're going to focus in on, I've got a short while walk to finish this up, on the nerve cell. Now, so the neuron. And part of this is me memorizing all the names for it. So the neurons, is the sort of slippery part. It's the sort of the glowing part, the cord in your kettle. You know, it's the, something that people really know about, because without it, your brain doesn't work. Information doesn't flow. I'm going to look at this in several parts, and then just get down to a little bit of molecular physics. So these nerve things are essentially chemical electric things, i.e. there's potential, so you can actually stick a probe on it and watch a pulse go down a nerve fiber or an axon, and you can trigger it electrically, and even with light you can actually activate them with light. Obviously we've got light sensitive nerves which see light. Yeah, that's one example of it. So you've got the nerve body. We'll start that off. So the nerve is the cell. You've got the cell body, which has the nucleus, one of the things is that neurons can't a brain cell can't reproduce, simply because to reproduce it's got to be roughly egg shape. Okay, so something which is an egg shape can't reproduce. It's just too long, too complex to reproduce, and especially when it's got an interaction with other individual cells, you can't. It just doesn't work that way. So there's a lot of structural problems. If a nerve cell dies, and lots of them do die, the support cells have to work out what's going on. It has to eventually eat your brain away, and your brain, as you go older, gradually shrinks as it shrinks and dies. And so as you get to 100, your brain, I don't know, is 2/3 of the weight or something like that, eating away. And if you drink or smoke, it's cactus, it's gone. So I shudder to think what's happened to my brain. People asking questions about it. But that being said, we've got this nerve cell, and the cell's got the nucleus, and it's got mitochondria. And I just want to really focus on mitochondria. Mitochondria are the little slave bacteria. So each cell in your body, and there's 37 trillion of them in your body, so that's 37 million a trillion in your body, has slave bits in it. So bits that billions of years ago, so about then, these ancient cells, archaic cells, ate a bacteria, and the bacteria began to live inside it, perhaps like a parasite, perhaps not. And it lived forever inside the cell. It found it a really comfy thing. And these mitochondria, as we call them, I'll have to work out why they're called mitochondria, they have the unique ability of eating sugar, which can be stored, energy stored, and oxygen, which is delivered to it, and it produces something called ATP, which is cell food, which is the important thing, which feeds, makes your nerve cell work. It's something called ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And these are little battery cells. They're highly polarized, unstable molecules which go across and slot in at key points. They have, because they're charged, they pop into proteins and make them move. So this is important. Now, what happens is that if we go back to your cell body has, if you like, it's a bit like some sort of termite with a long root system coming at the top of it. So you can imagine the cell is the I don't know, quite describe it. You've got the cell body, and out of the cell body are dendrites, or hairs. Now these hairs are rather important, because these So I just listened to kangaroo bashing its way through the bush. That's good. Because you don't get a lot of kangaroos this close to dogs. They just keep away from doggies. Who, if they, yeah, I don't know. Someone says, oh, so this is an aside. The smell of dogs just keeps kangaroos right away. It depends where they are. Around a farm where there's sheepdogs all the time, they get used to them. But domestic dogs, they just hate them. Okay, aside, getting back to this point, I'm giving this talk while I'm walking my way home from a cardiac walk. So, getting back onto it, this ATP is in all cells and it floods the cells and activates the proteins to start moving the proteins around the place. And so the dendrites pick up signals from the synapses and they pick them up, and the dendrites, if you like, have a lock logic to them. That is, each hair fiber has got a certain length and touches certain interplays with certain cells, other cells, interconnects, and it has basically a logic gate. So you can actually have one thing hit one thing and it hit one aspect of it, and if another hits it at the same time, it doesn't fire. Or if two hits at the same time and the third one hits at a certain time afterwards, it then goes. It's got this, so this is sort of like this incredibly complex logic gate which goes to these fibers. And of course these fibers are the thing which change for quick in quick succession. So that these things change really rapidly. So when you're looking at something, there's a whole set of new nerve impulses going into you. And it's actually forming, and your consciousness is these dendrites changing and moving all the time. And obviously, they move in a logic gate. They lock up and things like that. And they can change their state. These dendrites are pliable, flexible, in the short term. And the reason, there's certain ways that you can see that they could store information. So the speed of light going, the speed of an electrical signal going down these little doodads are determined by the capacitance, and so the actual little structure, so you could actually, like, they've got a skin on them, so you move the skin back and forth, you can change the capacitance really quickly of them, like very fast on them. And so this is how the dendrite actually works. Now, when you sleep, that movement reprograms, and the cells can actually grow and change and physically change shape, just subtly, to get a thought or a memory locked in. So that's the hair on yourself, the nerve body. So the nerve body, when it receives enough signal, will send a signal down the axon, which is a long fiber. So in the human body, I think the longest is about a meter long. It goes down. But definitely go down the spinal cord. And so these are long things. So in your brain, these go for long paths. Now, some with a few strokes, you've got to reprogram, reroute things. So it takes a bit of effort to get that going. And so the nerve signal travels along that. And when it finally hits the synapse, synapse, which are these little feet at the end, release neurotransmitters flood out, and dopamine, they're all amines, these are neurotransmitters, and essentially what happens is that they go out, and then there's enzymes which chew them up, so they stimulate the cell for a short burst, and then it mops it up, cleaning the slate. So it's sort of like writes something. It's like a computer screen, but it's actually physically written there, and you have to wipe it off with a wiper. And so, yeah, for me, there's a lot of molecular physics in the neurotransmitters and the enzymes which break them up, and the build-up of the enzyme which makes the neurotransmitters inside the synapse, and then the channels open up in the synapse. So it doesn't, it's producing the enzymes all the time, and in your brain it releases it. So every thought, there's an incredible number of chemical reactions going in your brain at any point in time. Oh, it's so beautiful. Sorry, just looking up at this beautiful Christmas tree. As we refer to electricity, so your cell is not a wire. Your nerve cell, and you can imagine, get a very fine one. They're less than a micron across. They're really small, sub-hair thickness, and they're not a wire. They're not a battery. They don't have a potential difference across them, so you, although you can measure a voltage being generated in, they're a radial battery. So what's happening is that the voltage changes, but the voltage changes from inner core of your axon fiber to the outer core. And this is, you know, how does this change? You've got two types of iron, and one's a potassium ion, the other one's a sodium ion. Now, a sodium ion is Na+, which is basically a neon. You know, neon is the one before sodium. Neon, sodium. So you take an electron off, so it shrinks down. A sodium ion is very, very small, very, very mobile, because neon is very small. It's a very mobile iron, and it's really your classic iron. Now, the problem is that your cell operates on the exchange of sodium and potassium ions from the outside to the inside of this axon. So you've got these channels which allow the sodium ions through, out through, and keep them out. And then you've also got potassium channels. And these are things which are charged in such a way. So I find it hard to see how you can have a potassium channel which stores also blocks the sodium channel. Now, sodium is a sort of a really interesting ion. It's a nice, small, minuscule ion. It's highly mobile. But also, you've got to have these ions behave electrically differently between the two things. So, if you've got ion exchange, right, you've got ion exchange, there is no net current flow. That is, the only current flow in a axion is an exchange of one type of positive ion for another type of positive ion. So it's sort of like you put in grapes and you get out oranges, but they've got the same sort of weight and gravitational pull. But potassium is potassium plus, K plus, has the same electron configuration as argon, except it's a positive charge on the inside. But the difference is that its overall size and the way that it responds to electric fields is subtly different. And I must admit, I don't fully understand this, but as a molecular physicist, I know certain things are happening, that the iron pump operation has to, it can't be controlled by nerves, because it is a nerve, so it can't be controlled by nerves. It has to be a local thing happening, that the iron imbalance falls apart and the cell, so what happens is you have sodium on the outside and potassium on the inside. It flips, then potassium, I think, goes to the outside, sodium goes inside, or vice versa. So when the nerve pulse travels through, it goes through. Now, what happens is that the nerve fiber itself doesn't know anything about the nerve pulse. It just knows that when it all falls around, it tries to repair the situation. So once it all falls down, oh my God, it's all fallen down. So there's instability up one end, and that instability travels down, releasing all the ions and letting it all fall in. And so it doesn't know the dynamics. It just only knows that if the nerve, it'd be interesting if the nerve pulse could travel both ways up a nerve fiber. That would be an interesting thing, but I don't think it can. So what happens is it, it's like all these bar men or bar men people, they instantly see bottles on the bottom shelf on the floor, and they all stack them up. And when they're all stacked up, someone then can push a bottle over, and all the bottles fall down again, and it goes, oh. So the individual bar person is unaware of how the thing works, but you can actually send some information by tipping over the bottles at one edge, and they all fall over. And that bar person is operated by nothing more than ATP. So the actual nerve fiber doesn't use sugar. It uses, like all proteins, ATP. And this setting up of ions is done, it's called the polarization. So it's like a capacitor. It's discharging, it's a surface capacitor which discharges its surface. The capacitor doesn't build up a charge, it just rearranges its shielding charges, if I can say. And the way it does that is that there are these molecules, proteins inside, which have got a dipole moment, and they can their localized dipole moment attracts or repels I suppose it would be potassium ions would be the ones that would do. I really don't know. I'd have to have a supercomputer bottle to do it. And so look, don't listen to me, I'm winging it. So far I'm just know that certain things must happen. It must be fired by ATP. It must create a quasi-stable state. That is when the when the nerve falls down, it settles for a while, such that everything is there, and then it rebuilds quickly. It's called a resting function. When the nerve pulse fires, it goes through, and then it has to settle, and then after it's settled, it has to pretty much flip at the same time. It's got to get itself into sync, and it all flips up again. Across, and this lifting up the bottle is physical rotation of these molecules, which have a low energy rotated state. So physically, it moves, it rotates them. I believe it rotates the molecule around. It could change the shape of the molecule. That might be. The simplest thing that I can imagine is the molecule moves around, but I suppose it could also move these sheath molecules such that the dipole feel of it changes. And and there has to be, the dipole field has to be different. So there has to be something about a molecule which can move its dipole moment closer to the sheath. And it's got to physically move it away. I can't quite see. I suppose it could be a changing shape. It'd be interesting if it changed shape. But the way that I imagine it is a physical rotation away, because you want to actually make it unfriendly for one type of ion, so it will rush on the inside, and then when it flips out, it's those ions are now wanted on the outside, and allows the change. Now, you can have your so you've got this cell fiber. Now, the cell fiber has these portals in it, which lets the ions go in and out, pass in and out, and I think you can have one directional flow of these ions, there are these cases where you can stop water. You may have equal amount of water flowing in and out, but these are very small distances, so your nerve is very small. Small diameter. These are incredibly small diameters, and so this is, I've got my imagination of how it goes. Look, I must admit, I haven't read an article about it. Love to do a supercomputer simulation of it. So, there is something inside your nerve, which is a molecule, which is moved by ATP. So, the ATP would. Yeah, it's just good to have equivalent to an electric circuit. You've got to have some relay function pushing on. ATP could close and open ports, which is okay, but that really wouldn't cause ions to move in and out, preferentially move in and out. And so you can have an end of a molecule which wants to actually have, say, potassium ions, and you can bend them over so that it wants to have potassium ions, and the potassium ions, to get to the outside, move through the pores and sit on the outside of the protein, so the cell wall. Long cell wall, so it sits on the outside of the cell wall, and it's now stable there because it's attracted. It's like holding a magnet by another magnet underneath the table. It's attracted there, and then when it flips, it moves across, and the other ion, which I believe would have to be the sodium ion, is just there to, when the charge builds up, to exchange. So there's no net charge flow, but the actual polarization of your axion decays. So you've got this metastable, that is stable, like I don't know what you could define it, like balancing a pencil on end. I'd say like a bottle on the shelf. You can put the bottle up the shelf. Once the bottles start doing each other, all the bottles fall down again, and your bartenders re-put it up to this metastable state. So, up on the shelf is metastable, in that there is a lower energy state. It could be if you push it off the shelf. So this is the process in which a neuron eats sugar. Now, Or is, I don't know whether the neuron is fed ATP by its astrocytes, because there's an important thing is that your neurons do not come into contact with blood. Okay? There's a blood-brain barrier which keeps the blood at bay. And so there's support cells which absorb and pass nutrients into a cell. I suppose oxygen could fuse across. This seems a pretty hair-raising way for it to happen. Oxygen could be infused into the cerebral fluid. Sugar, right, itself is just too big and too ugly. Well, so ATP is basically a part of it. So a sugar molecule with two hydrogens, so half a sugar molecule. Most sugars that are saccharides, it's in crystal form. This is sort of like a base, adenine, ATP. Adenosine is very similar to the base in terms of its structure, and it's got this phosphate, triple phosphate. So that little battery energy unit is the energy unit which fits the molecule, which sucks the protein, the ions out. And I would expect there's a slow flow, relatively slow flow of ions out leads to it being done stably. It's sort of like putting something in balance and then slowly stacking it up. Like building a house of cards, you build it up slowly. So there's that, and this is definitely true. The nerve pulse races through, and the build is a dead time, a recovery time, as it builds up. And build up is, I think it would have to be rotation. It could be a reconfiguration of the cell. It's hard for me to imagine it other than a rotation, but it could be some aspect which changes the polarization orientation of the cell. That is the stuff which attracts the potassium ions, attracts it to the outside from the inside, and vice versa. Thanks a lot for listening. I hope this has got some of the way through, and that people listening to it are saying, oh, yeah, perhaps, or perhaps, well, firstly, nerves are, nerve neurons are, operate like any other cell based on ATP. The ATP, like anything, does not move ions around, it moves proteins around, which then moves the ions. So these are the facts of any living thing. Then you've got your pores, and your pores allows the ions to travel between the two things, but you've got to have an ion pressure, an ion exchange going on, and so your orientation of your protein allows an ion exchange. So your ion exchange is associated with the depolarization of your cell, so it's a rippling depolarization wave, and then it repolarizes afterwards. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.